On the first Sunday Extra of 2021, you might recall that we played a superb new track in the style of Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical tribute to the United States' first Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton. This one is a hip-hop tribute to the first female Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen.
Doves on the left, hawks on the right, crosstalk in the flock trying to fight mid-flight. But here comes Yellen with that inside voice. Never mind the mild manner, policies make noise. She's 5 foot nothing, but hands are God. She could pop a collar, she could rock a power bar. Bay Ridge represent, Brooklyn's in the cabinet. Damn, Janet, go and get it, fifth in line for president. I heard she called the house in crisis. It only took a couple centuries, the first female Secretary of the Treasury.
And I'm delighted to say that the creator of Who's Yellin' Now, Dessa, joins us now on Sunday Extra. Originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Dessa is an exquisitely talented and clever rapper and musician with a dizzying array of genre-defying output as a soloist and in all sorts of intriguing collaborations. You might have heard her searing cover of the Hamilton song Congratulations, where Angelica Hamilton tears strips off her unfaithful husband.
Congratulations. You have invented a new kind of stupid. A damage you can never undo kind of stupid. And open all the cages at the zoo kind of stupid. Truly, you didn't think this through kind of stupid. So scared of what your enemies might do to you. But you're the only enemy you ever seem to lose to. You know why Jefferson can do what he wants? He doesn't dignify schoolyard taunts with a response. So yeah, congratulations. You've redefined your legacy. Congratulations.
And while saluting a feminist icon Treasury Secretary is one thing, Dessa also literally provided the soundtrack for the biopic of none other than the notorious RBG.
I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.
We welcome today Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Swinging every pitch, coach put me in like. It's been assumed I'm soft or irrelevant, cause I refuse to downplay my intelligence. But in the room with thugs and rap veterans, why am I the only one who's acting like a gentleman?
And if that wasn't enough, she's also a widely published writer across many genres, journalism, poetry, and a collection that she calls a memoir in essays. It's called My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science, and Senseless Love. And I'm very pleased to welcome Dessa to Sunday Extra.
Oh, man, what a welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, this Yellen track is a lot of fun and really has sort of made a bit of a splash. Can you tell us the story of how Who's Yellen Now came about?
Yeah, you know, so as our new President Biden was announcing his nominees for his cabinet, he kind of made like an off-the-cuff joke as he announced that his nominee for the Secretary of Treasury was Janet Yellen. And in a press conference, he said, oh, you know, maybe Lin-Manuel Miranda should write her in a musical, essentially. And there was a radio program here that heard that and thought, yo, let's take him up on it. But obviously, I'm sure that Lin-Manuel is, yeah, his calendar has been full. So they called me and I dug the idea. So I said, when's it due? I think was my first question. And they were like, it's due really soon. And yeah, so I called a couple of my collaborators and I was like, is there any way that we can pull this off? A couple guys who I'd worked with on the Congratulations mixtape too, Andy Thompson and Laserbeak. And they said, I think we can just barely do this. And we did just barely. So it was a few days, maybe a week or so, maybe a little bit more. But I know that the audio that we actually submitted, you know, for airplay, like we didn't have time to get it mastered. So it's just a mix.
It was hot off the press, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously it's had a great reaction. Could you maybe give us some of the highlights of how Who's Yellin' Now has been received, in particular by Madam Secretary herself?
You know, it's like you try not to jinx a project when you finish it by imagining how it might be received generally, because it's just such a recipe for disappointment. But this was like such a special case. And I know that Marketplace Money, the radio program that I commissioned the thing, was like, yo, I think she's going to hear it. And I didn't know. I wasn't sure. And then it'd been out for a couple of days. And my manager and friend, Becky, wrote me this email that was like, I just got an email from the Treasury Department. we were laughing because it's like, that would have been such bad news.
Few people celebrate. Like, yeah, exactly. The tax office has got us. Yay.
It's like, what could be worse? Anyway, you know, they said that she'd heard it and she liked it. And so she posted a goofy tweet saying as much. And then you know, we're all sitting at home, right? So there's nothing to do but check the internet. But like watching my Twitter feed blow up was one whole day. And then when the Treasury Department, like the official Twitter account of the Treasury Department, like chimed in with a pun, I think that was when my head officially exploded in my one bedroom apartment. Like, what is going on? Yeah.
That sweet. Is superb. So as well as getting the seal of approval for Madam Secretary herself, I gather you also got a bit of a tick from Lin-Manuel himself. Is that right?
You know, I texted him before the gig was complete just to say, man, like of all the doors that you have opened, thank you for like clear cutting this particular path through the jungle. Like what a market you've created.
And it's a niche which certainly wasn't there before him, was it? I can imagine it. Have you got every sort of undersecretary and half sworn in mid-level official getting in contact for their anthem?
I'll be honest. We've had some emails. We have indeed. So yeah, I sent him a note saying, yo, you know, thanks for making this a thing in the world. And after the song came out, he texted me with a compliment too. So yeah, it did feel good, weird and good.
We're speaking with Dessa, the creator of Who's Yellen Now, the tribute to the first female Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen. Dessa, can we go back now and just hear a little bit about your personal background and early career? And I'm especially interested in how you came to be a part of the hip hop scene.
Yeah, you know, for me, it was sort of a circuitous path. I'd really wanted to be a writer, like in junior high and high school. But it's kind of hard to figure out, like, what the very first step of that gig should be. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, there's nowhere you can report to duty. So I was kind of writing stuff and then, like, you know, just sending it off to famous magazines. But it's not like they were really publications from, like, 18-year-olds in the Midwest. So I ended up being invited to compete in a poetry slam. And it was there that I met the members of the hip hop community in Minneapolis that ended up inviting me to be part of that scene. So for me, it was sort of this like a series of lateral moves trying to figure out like how to get over the retaining wall to the arts scene. And yeah, I spent a lot of time as a musician before essentially like returning to the page, you know, to write a little bit about that experience as well.
Mm. You know, the hip-hop scene is often characterized by male bravado, not always from the textbook of feminism and sort of treating people with dignity, but your work often sort of challenges that, but with your own form of bravado as well. What's it been like forging your way as a woman on the hip-hop scene?
When I started getting to the scene, which was, you know, years ago now, I was aware of and troubled by like the six-letter F word, you know, the homophobic slur that was still sometimes being trafficked in that community. But to be honest, it's such a large community, yeah, and so much of it is based in like social justice issues, even though I probably wouldn't have used that phrase then. You know what I mean? It's like when I started in Minneapolis in the underground scene, you know, it wasn't about like, you know, fancy expensive cars and stuff. It was very much like, here's a hip hop for the homeless benefit at our local club. So yeah, it was very much involved with that kind of stuff. And then the other thing about bravado, it's weird. It's like, I think there is a sweet spot. Like you can treat people with dignity and come in blazing. You can do both, yeah, right? Like be awesome, just don't be a jerk.
So, yeah. That's excellent. And as I said in the intro, your output's really been characterized by a whole lot of really interesting and eclectic collaborations. Mm. Could you tell us a little bit about Doomtree, your collective there, and maybe a few of the other projects that chart the sort of the various outer limits of your work so far?
Yeah, I mean, so I think like punk music, the hip hop community of which I was a part was really DIY, you know. Mm. So it's not like there's no cubicle, obviously, but there's also no like contract. It was an invitation to like hang out with other music makers, and everybody sort of just learned how to be a business on the way. You know, you find somebody who can screen print and that person helps you do your t-shirts, and you go to the local like copy shop to Xerox all the pages that will become your album art. You know, it was really, it's like a high school zine or something. That's how it felt in the beginning. And then slowly it kind of, you know, you calcify and develop the skills into like a proper business. So there was a lot of really slow growth, which makes it tough to like connect with an audience and pay rent. But you also get to like make all of your own creative decisions from releasing songs with no repeating choruses to deciding that I want to wear whatever, a sweater on stage, you know, like I certainly made mistakes, but they've been my mistakes to make. Yeah.
And I see in some of your bios that you're also listed as a record executive as well. Have you sort of consciously concerned yourself with the business side of the music industry?
You know, years and years ago when Doomtree, we'd kind of freshly formed as like, a properly incorporated indie record label, essentially. I was technically the CEO, but it was because somebody had to be the CEO on right. the paper. And I was in the beginning really concerned with business. I had like some experience as a tech writer. I knew a little bit about business, but in the intervening years, one of the other members named Laserbeak has taken it over and taken it to heights that would have been very tough to reach for me. He's a great leader.
And obviously you mentioned before being stuck at home at the moment, the music scene in particular has been devastated by COVID-19. What's it like for you and for your Doomtree colleagues being a musician and artist in a time of pandemic?
Oh, I don't want to get too emo. but it, I mean, it doesn't feel good. Yeah, I think probably in some ways, maybe other people can relate too, that it's been, it's forced reflection, and that can be good. But it very much feels like the life that I was living paused. I mean, and the life that I'm living now is really different. You know, I've spent today making like split pea soup. I mean, you can't do that in a hotel room or in the microwave at Amoco. So the life I was living was really itinerant. And just a bunch of travel. I shouldn't say itinerant, but hotel beds were home, very often in a shared room. And the life of an indie musician is very much comprised of touring, because that's how we make our living, given the fact that, Spotify usually doesn't pay the bills and nobody's buying music anymore. Ours was a life on the road. And so to have that halted very suddenly definitely was an occasion for whiplash. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, do you think that there's a new and viable business model that's emerged during this time, or is it really a question of sort of waiting it out and hoping you can get back to the model as it was before and the performing that you love doing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think like a lot of aspects of our society, or maybe around the world, but definitely in the US, I think the big conversations are like, let's build back something better than it was. You know, we've been thinking about race, police, gender, power, and in a little way, probably the structure of the industry that I'm in, I think was overdue for a good think. So I don't exactly know what the new structure would look like, but I am, a little piece of me is very cautiously hopeful that there might be an opportunity to try to build something better than the streaming model, which treats consumers so well. And as a music consumer, I dig it. I can find anything from around the world immediately, but treats content creators pretty poorly, where it makes it really hard for people who are actually making art to be compensated fairly for the work. So not rich, but just like fairly paid. Yeah.
Are there particular artists or I don't know whether it's apps, businesses, companies that you think might be sort of shining a light, showing, leading the way forward on that? Are there models that look to you like they could work?
You know, I think so. I'm at the risk of running a little ahead of my headlights here, so I'll speak carefully. But even for a model like Spotify, right? Where you've got like the free thing, where you can listen to ads and it's free, or the premium, where you bypass the ads and you pay whatever, $10 or $12 a month. I think that a model like that can work, but the corporate entities in charge of deciding how those profit margins are distributed are going to need to face some pressure to consider cutting in the artists. So, I think that streaming models are possible, but right now, because artists are not generally like banded together very strongly to rally on our own behalves, and because we're also just really eager to get the stuff out, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have it out than hoard it and until someone pays for it. We're working on at least two bottom lines, right? It can be tricky. Yeah. So in some ways, I do wonder consumer pressure, you know, here in the States. I forgive me for not knowing quite as well the governing Australian laws. But, you know, a lot of the rates that music creators are compensated by are governmentally mandated. So like when my song's on the radio, that's not a negotiated rate. That's a you know, that's a mandated rate. Or excuse me, when I covered a Bruce Springsteen song, right? I didn't call Bruce like, yo, let's talk, you know, like that's a mandated rate. So yeah, we already regulate a lot of how artists are compensated. And so that's a decision that we're collectively making as a culture about how much monetary value art is really worth.
Well, whatever your future holds, I'm sure it'll be creative and interesting and no doubt popular. And as you'll always have that tweet from the Secretary of the Treasury and the US Mint. And I believe, am I right in thinking that you've also had an ice cream named after you, Dessa?
I did. This is much happier. These are much happier waters. Yes.
Yeah.
I got to work.
what was your ice cream flavor named and what was in it?
I did two, excuse me. And the first one was called Dessa's Existential Crunch. And it was based on a lot of the treats that I enjoyed backstage, chief among them whiskey. So it was a whiskey-flavored praline ice cream with an indie outfit called Izzy's. They're really cool.
I can feel people Googling it now.
Yes. And I also got to partner later with an indie distillery that like specializes in organic fare. So I got to make a rye whiskey and a bourbon whiskey with Rock Filter Distillery in Minnesota.
Wow. Well, it's been great speaking with you. We'll go out with the sounds of some of your 2019 collaboration with the Minnesota Orchestra. But Dessa, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me. And with any luck, fingers crossed to make a visit to Sydney in the not too distant future.
Here's hoping. And you can wander through the wonderful world of Dessa via her homepage, dessawander.com. That's Wander with an A. And this track is called Velodrome.
I don't believe my world's quite free. I'm half ashamed, at least half steam. A quietness call on me. How many angels on the head of your pin? Anybody in stilettos can answer that old thing. It's one for the right foot, one for the left. Half an angel per pin at best. At wings, at harp all set. We lean to turn in the velodrome. All lines are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll, wheels, flesh and bone. Total control in it. It's ours alone. We lean to turn. All eyes are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll with flesh and bones. We're controlling it. It's ours alone. Contagious, Eve leaping, eaten in a makeshift dress. With a bell to tell us we're hungry. There's a bell that tells us when we're tired. There's a bell that tells us to rise and fight. A bell to rise and die. It's just a bell. Sometimes I'll ring myself to see if I might chime. We lean to turn the velodrome. All lines are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll, wheels, flesh and bones. It's ours alone. We lean to turn in the velodrome. All lines are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll, his flesh and bones are controlling. It's ours alone. We lean to turn in the velodrome. All lines are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll, his flesh and bones are controlling. It's ours alone. We lean to turn in the velodrome. All lines are curved in the velodrome. We pitch and roll, his flesh and bones are controlling. Deciding where to go and how to ride there. And in the end, again, we all vote yes, we all turn left. We lean to turn in the velodrome. We lean to turn in the velodrome.